everybody. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. Glad you're with us. I'm Tom Hall. Shelley Puhak lives in Catonsville and teaches creative writing at Notre Dame of Maryland University. In November of 2013, her second collection of poetry was published by Wayweiser Press. It won the Anthony Hecht Poetry Prize. It's called Guinevere in Baltimore, and it is a fascinating collection of poems that places characters of King Arthur's medieval court, plus a few other historical figures, smack dab in the middle of Charm City. Arthur is a corporate CEO, Lancelot is his best salesman, and Guinevere, who completes the famous love triangle, is approaching middle age with all the angst of a reality show housewife. In Guinevere in Baltimore, we see these famous mythological characters in places like Fort McHenry, Lexington Market, the Home Depot, and the Apple Store. It's a terrific and engaging read, and Shelley Puhak joins me in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for this book. This is really something special. This is unlike anything I've read before, poetry or prose.
High praise. Thank you.
I really, really liked it a lot. Do us a favor. Recap for us short little bios of the original characters in Arthur's court, and then I want to talk about how you sort of recast them. So let's talk about who Arthur was, Lancelot, Guinevere, Galahad, and Elaine.
Okay. So I was going to say, well, King Arthur at this point in the narrative is kind of on the wane. So after Camelot has kind of peaked. So he grows old in the tales with the same sort of angst that we all do. But Lancelot, who is a French knight who has, joined the Round Table, becomes Guinevere's infamous lover. Galahad is his son, but by Elaine of Corbenic, who was the daughter of the Fisher King and also keeper of the Grail. But of course, Lancelot was not pure enough to attain the Grail for himself, so it ends up being his son Galahad who does so in the legend.
Right, so all of these folks make an appearance in your book, but you have recast them, you sort of updated them. So tell us how they are in their updated iterations.
Well, Elaine, who I just mentioned, is now of Corbenic or also of Chicago, and Lancelot is her baby daddy. And so they, Galahad, in that sense, I guess, would be the purest sort of bastard known. Mm-hmm. And we also have, I was going to say, Guinevere, who, as you mentioned, is sort of this bored housewife, but she's old enough to kind of understand the consequences of what she's initiated and also clever enough to kind of see it in the context, the cultural context. But here we have Lancelot, who's sort of, I'd say, more the emotional kind of heartbroken, maybe even a tad bit whiny one. And then, of course, we have Arthur, who may or may not know about their trysts, but it seems likely that he probably does, and is just worn down with all of the obligations of kingdom and corporation.
So when you read the legend of Arthur, are you thinking, sort of what's really going through their minds? Or are you, in this narrative, in this collection of poems, are you transposing them to Baltimore and say, if these same characters existed in our modern age, this is what they would be thinking?
I'd say a little bit of both, but mostly the latter, that transposing these characters and seeing what they would be like in our own urban landscape.
And what do we learn about them doing that?
Well, I think it goes back to, the metaphor makes the argument. That sort of Neil Postman quote about a man with a pencil, everything looks like a list. But we might also say, to a city with a corporation, what do its citizens then look like? Or to people who are used to computers and machines, what does love look like? So that was one way of sort of recasting it.
So, King Arthur in the Camelot legend is powerful because he's a king. Here he is the CEO of Camelot Transatlantic Shipping, and also the king of the Britons, by the way, as you say, because you give us this nice list of the dramatis personae in the beginning, and then you explain who they all are sort of at the end. So there's this wonderful We garner an insight into each of these characters as we read from beginning to end in the book. But all of these poems, I take it, were published separately in other places at various times over the past several years. So were you conscious and purposeful about creating a narrative that you just sort of and then you disseminated some of the poems one at a time? Or did you find yourself with a narrative all of a sudden, having published all these poems that involve Lancelot and
No, or I had, I think, the narrative
from
the
get-go. This is a chicken and the egg question.
Yeah, it's a chicken and the egg. I think I had the narrative from the get-go. And actually, I was really lucky. A lot of the pieces, places that picked up the poems picked them up in pairs or sometimes in threes. So I was getting a lot of encouragement for editors that recognized that they weren't, hopefully they work as standalones, but that they work really well in conversation with one another.
Yeah. The titles of some of these are just as fun and wonderful as the poems themselves. We've got, you know, Lancelot in the Apple Store. We've got Lancelot at the Home Depot. There's a lot of shopping that goes on.
Well, you know.
Could I ask you to read one of them? Let's start with Lancelot in the Apple Store. I mean, it doesn't come at the beginning of the narrative by any means, but it's an example of sort of this melding of the ancient and the modern.
Certainly. This is Lancelot in the Apple Store. Excuse me, knight of the blue shirt and untrimmed beard, knight of stylus and screen, I'm seeking help for my silvered one. While you wait, it might be a week or more, sample our newest apps. Do you need to keep better tabs on her, discern if she's menstruating, weigh her waist to hip ratio? While I wait, I only need a quiet spot to shed her zippered case, unhook her accessories, recharge her fidelity. That may prove difficult with the older model. Have you sampled our newest, fresh from the factory? So thin, so pert, I'm tempted, certainly. Fresh from the factory. The factory, I see. Tell me, sir, I heard on the news there was a hand made into a claw by your factory. A claw made into a hand in your factory. Don't concern yourself with the clockwork of factories far, far away, or the temper of your own king. Her battery life will outlast any love. Look, stroke her screen, your finger, press here, harder, here.
Shelley Puhak, she's here with me in the studio. She's the winner of the 8th Annual Anthony Hecht Prize in Poetry for this latest collection, Guinevere in Baltimore on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So are you trying to sort of reimagine how a contemporary context would affect our understanding of the myth itself, our understanding of this ancient story?
I'm more interested, perhaps, in how this ancient story might inform our understanding of how we do business in the city, how we construct the city, how we relate to one another. So kind of the old, those who don't learn their history are doomed to repeat it.
Yeah. This book is not at all autobiographical, as far as I can tell, at least. I mean, a lot of poets, you read their work, and clearly it comes from their own personal experience. There's a sense of detachment here. There's a character that you describe as the speaker. She's neither a maid, wife, nor widow. And at the end of the book, we find out that what that means is that basically she's a prostitute. You know? Yeah. So she is this sort of somewhat detached narrator. Is that purposeful? You're trying to do this in kind of third person?
Absolutely. And I think I took my cue from a lot of the troubadour medieval poetry, you know, which writes about this particular love triangle. And also from the Victorians, the collection starts with a little quote from William Morris's In Defense of Guinevere. And so a lot of the Victorians took that sort of, I guess, journalistic approach to where they'd almost set up the characters as if they're in court and one gets to defend themselves and, you know, present their case. So setting up in poetry more as we are used to seeing it, I guess, on the stage.
Yeah, and your first book was called Stalin in Aruba.
Yeah.
So it does the same sort of thing. It takes an historical figure and places him and people around him in a place that you wouldn't think.
Yeah.
Let me ask you to turn to page 31.
Sure.
And this is where Arthur has an intersection with, of all things, the Occupy Wall Street movement.
Yes. And I may need to give you just a little bit of information that the schistosoma worms, but this disease is actually second to only malaria in the developing world. And so these are very, very painful worms, but they take up residence in your bladder. And oftentimes, if you'll forgive me from being gruesome, but the sores that they create when they're trying to get out are often mistaken for like venereal lesions. So there always is that question of how to treat it. So that's something Arthur's going to refer to in the poem.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur to Guinevere, while watching Occupy Wall Street unfold on the evening news. I've just read of those schistosoma worms with marriages more stable than the humans they inhabit. I've learned of this snail fever, This disease, their loyalty breeds eggs in our bladders, buoyancy in our blood, cling and twist, pile and chafe. Their mating clots us up, creates an ache between our legs we might mistake for desire. My head to your breast, would I hear those worms sigh? There are pesticide-laden apples, lead-coated combs, a dozen things to fear. When the worms writhe, there's no microphone small enough to listen. What to tell our subjects, what alibi for staying put when the weather's mild and the sunset's pink with particulates? Long married, let's try to occupy one another and forget the tents downtown, forget that you have fallen sick. Let's tell the court biographer the clouds were thick with carbon, the doves snored, the horses dozed. The pang between your legs was that of devotion, parasitic, and the briar arched up and closed, all of us under its tent.
All of us under its tent. Oh, that's really something.
Thank you.
Shelley Puhak, the book is called Guinevere in Baltimore on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. This is a very sexy book. There's lots of really great, passionate exchanges and passionate, almost like entries in a diary. They reminded me of people sort of, you know, bearing their souls about, you know, the most intimate feelings. And that would seem to me on its face to be a really difficult thing to achieve in poetry, that it somehow prose would be... you'd have a better shot of getting that deep in prose. And maybe that's just because I'm a very inexperienced reader of poetry. But are you aware of the sort of the sensuous heat that's coming out of these pages?
No, it's good. I mean, I was intending it, so I'm glad that you're picking up on some of it. And I was going to say, I would love to have tried it in prose, except I think I'm more of a failed prose writer. So, so this is the way I do it.
You know, Anthony Heck, the person, the prize is named mm-hmm. after that you've received, and this prize goes to, as I understand it, sort of new poets. I mean, it celebrates a first or second collection of poetry, so it's not for established poets who've got, you know, a dozen or so. But he also wrote about history.
Yes.
He wrote about his experiences in World War II and the Holocaust. These are very important elements in his work. I wonder, do you think this prize is particularly appropriate for this collection because it's based in history?
I'd like to think so. I was especially honored because of Heck's work and also sort of his, I would say, moral vision and that sense that poetry exists for some real purpose other than our own sort of catharsis.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, so congratulations.
Thank you
so
much.
I really, really enjoyed it. Shelley Puhak, her latest collection of poetry is called Guinevere in Baltimore. It's the winner of the 8th Annual Anthony Hecht Prize in Poetry. It's published by Wayweiser Press. Shelley Puhak is the Eichner Professor of Creative Writing at Notre Dame of Maryland University. She'll be at the Ivy Bookshop reading from her new book tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. We've got a link to more information and Shelley Puhak's website at our website. Come to wypr.org/Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.